it's time for Animaniacs. And we're zany to the max. So just sit back and relax. You'll laugh till you collapse. We're Animaniacs. Come join the Warner Brothers
and the Warner Sister Dot.
Just for fun we run around the Warner movie lot. They lock us in the tower whenever we get caught. But we break loose and then the moose, and now you know the plot. We're Animaniacs. Dot is cute and Yakko yaks. Wacko packs away the snacks while Bill Clinton plays the sax. We're Animaniacs.
Listening to CJLO 1690 AM. This is the Onomatopoeia Show, where we cover all graphic arts all the time. And that was the Pinky and the Brain theme song from the show Animaniacs. And prior to that, of course, was the theme to Animaniacs. Why am I playing these wonderful, wonderful cartoony songs? Because I love cartoons. Yes, I do. And it's really weird because lately it seems like my whole world has been revolving around cartoons for the past week. I love them so much. Maybe it's because when I was a little kid, I was a bit of a TV baby and I watched a lot of cartoons. And I, you know, even just researching this show, I was like, oh, the colors, oh, the designs, ooh, cartoons, I love you. So the other thing that happened that was really exciting, normally, like, I've got this new MP3 player, and it's cool because it shows videos and stuff. And normally when I try to download stuff for this thing, it never works out. But I was downloading music for Animaniacs, and I somehow managed to accidentally download a video clip. So I put on, like, the half-hour Animaniacs video clip on my little MP3 player, and I'm sitting there on the metro, and I'm laughing my bum off. Like, I couldn't believe how much fun I was having watching this cheesy Animaniacs episode. But there's some gems out there, and that's what we're going to talk about today, is all the various cool cartoon gems out there that I have seen lately, recently, around you know, they're around. There's really good shows. So I was going to kind of do it like chronologically a little bit. Mostly it's just like what's in my collection and not so much the things that I've seen as a child, but not so much like stuff like I'm not trying to cover all of it. I'm just trying to cover what I like. And I'm not going to be covering the Japanese cartoons because that just deserves a whole show unto itself. So just so you're clear. One of my favorite cartoon companies from the past would be the Fleischer brothers. They are two brothers who did amazing cartoons in the 40s, especially the Superman cartoon that they did. It's unlike anything I've seen before. And in fact, Bruce Timm, who did a lot of the Batmans, which we'll get into later, he owes a lot to the Fleischer brothers and their style of cartooning. It's very clean and very, very stylish. And they were doing Superman in the 40s, so it was pretty interesting. You'd think it'd be kind of cheesy. Well, yeah, okay, maybe it is a little cheesy. Lois is always in trouble and Superman always has to save her. But I like, you know, as much as I do like Bruce Timm, I enjoy this Fleischer Brothers cartoon version of Superman a lot more than what he did with, like, Superman Adventures. The other thing is they also started to use rotoscope during that time. I don't know, I'm really partial to it. Maybe it's because I'm like a He-Man baby, but I really find myself gravitating towards rotoscope. The other impetus for the show, besides my Animaniacs on MP3, was I was hanging out with Rupert Bottenberg, and he has tons and tons of cartoons at his house, and he could, like, play cartoons, and I would never leave. It was so awesome. And one of the things he showed us was this amazing cartoon from a box set called the Animated Soviet Propaganda Collection, and it's all a bunch of cartoons from Russia about mostly America, and it starts, like, from the 30s. I think 33 was the earliest one they showed, but the one that Rupert showed us was this one called Shooting Range, and it came out in 1979, and it was really, I found it very similar to Ralph Bakshi in a way. It had that clean style, and it was super graceful in the way that rotoscoping does make things effortlessly graceful looking. The colors were very 70s. Rupert likes to compare it to the sort of Disney 1, 2, 3, or not Disney, what am I saying? Sesame Street 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12 cartoon bit. Because it has that sort of 70s groovy, psychedelic look to it. Now, the content of the story of the Shooting Range is really interesting because it's all about, you know, American capitalist scum. So it's this young guy and he's in his, you know, jalopy. He's kind of like this skinnier Howard Cruzy looking archery. And he's, you know, he's meandering along with his jalopy. It blows up. And so, well, not like blows up, it just, you know, expires. And he's stuck on his own. He's got to find work to get to where he's going. So he takes a job in this shooting range, not really realizing what it's about. And then what it is about is the fact that, you know, you're going to be shot at. He's like a moving target that provides more of a challenge for the people that are shooting. So as time wears on, you know, he meets a girl, they fall in love, they get married. She, of course, starts living in the shooting range, and the man that owns the shooting range, his first response is to tack on a new sign saying two new live targets, and they have children in the shooting range, and then two live targets with children, you know, and as time goes on, you know, more money is made at the shooting range. But it was a very interesting commentary, and to be watching it and realizing that it was from Russia and that it was also from the 70s blew me away. Like, I like, you know, obviously a lot of the cartoons I saw as a child growing up, some were British, some were American, and a lot were Canadian, but it's nothing like that. So if you get a chance to, I'm going to be definitely looking for this Animated Soviet Propaganda Cartoons box set. I don't know how much it is. Probably kind of expensive because it's like a collection thingy, but it's definitely, definitely worth it if you're into cartoons and the history of cartoons. The other thing that Rupert showed us was actually a couple of days ago at his place. It was really amazing. I'd never seen these things. And, you know, I watch a lot of cartoons, but, well, that's why Rupert's special. He knows where the good stuff is. Tomorrowland by Walt Disney. I'm assuming they were put together for the actual Tomorrowland within the Disney World milieu. You know, there's like Tomorrowland, Past Land, Frontier Land. Because when we went to Disney World, I went to Epcot Center. And I didn't really pay much attention to all the different lands. I think I went to Tomorrowland. There was a futuristic alien space ride thing. That must have been Tomorrowland. Anyways, the thing that I enjoyed about watching these Tomorrowland snippets is they were really interesting how they decided to lay out the story. Because, okay, these Tomorrowland little bits didn't have any story. One was Man in the Moon. The other one that I enjoyed was Mars and Beyond. Man in the Moon was actually various cartoon segments about how men have decreed various personality traits within the stratosphere and solar system and how they look at the moon and the world and planets around them. And so it was actually pretty funny and the illustration was interesting. It was a wide variety of stuff, but it was actually the one producer who did all these Tomorrowlands. Now, I was watching it, and I was kind of like, this is neat. I really enjoy this. But Rupert was, like, hopping all around go the room going, oh, my God, Yellow Submarine. He's still stealing from Yellow Submarine. And it had been forever since I'd seen Yellow Submarine, so I didn't really know what he was talking about. But and I'm going to have to watch it to compare. But the other thing that was awesome about it was Mars and Beyond. Now, these were done in the 1950s. Man and Moon was 55, Mars and Beyond was 57. And the thing about Mars and Beyond that was so cool was that it was actually Disney illustrating fictional writers' takes on what was happening on Mars, or who the aliens or the Martians were, or, you know, just what it was like on Mars. So, you know, you have like H.G. Wells and all these different philosophers and all these different fictional characters of different types of aliens. And I just, that was the coolest thing for me, because it was really neat to see like their take on all the different aliens. Whereas before it was just like, you know, history of Earth throughout time and stuff, dinosaurs and, you know, creatures and crustaceans. But I Mars and Beyond, I think, was really neato. You can get those cartoons. It's part of a Walt Disney Treasures series. And that box set is like $90 or something ridiculous, but I think you get a lot of bang for your buck. The other thing that was coming out during that time in 1959 that I was a really big fan of was some of the Disney movies, especially Sleeping Beauty and Alice in Wonderland and 101 Dalmatians. Mary Blair was the illustrator behind Alice in Wonderland, and her style is very cartoony and kid-like, but it's really stylish in a sort of 50s, you know, swinger style. And they used a lot of her illustrations for Disney's Alice in Wonderland. So even though it's a Disney film, it does kind of look like a Mary Blair film. Also, Sleeping Beauty, I was a really big fan of, because Evind Erl, I guess, obviously as a child, I had no idea who this guy was. But there was a great exhibit at the Museum des Beaux-Arts about Disney animators. And like, well, not necessarily the animators, but the illustrators behind the animation. And so Evind Erl was one of them. And from what I understood, it was the first time that Disney had given an illustrator so much power over the style of the cartoon. He was supposed to do like background designs and some character stuff, but he ended up doing like a lot of the whole theme of the movie. So it's really much about his style. And Sleeping Beauty, of course, was a pretty dark cartoon compared to some of the other ones. It's one thing to bear mentioning for like the old Disney movies, is they had some pretty interesting themes going on. Another cartoon that I totally love is one of these cartoons called C-Lab, and it's kind of in the old section for one reason, because C-Lab was initially a show called C-Lab 2020 that was put together by Hanna-Barbera, and it was like, let's see here, it was, what am I trying to say, C-Lab, Alex Toth did the illustrations and character design for it, so it was like really stock footage, like really choppy kind of. And it's part of this new wave of stuff, which is not necessarily new anymore, but like Harvey Birdman and Space Ghost Coast to Coast, they're using found footage from the old series, and they're rewording it and re-dialoguing it to make it funny and relevant for now. And I've seen a bit of Harvey Birdman, and you really need to know your history in cartoons to watch it. And I've seen a bit of Space Ghost Coast to Coast, and it's all right. But the one I really loved the most was C-Lab 2021. And so the thing that's also really funny about C-Lab 2020, I find it so bizarre and absurd, like it cracks me up every time. There was an episode where one of the characters decided to get all the other characters addicted to this specific drug, and they had nowhere to go, so like they just kept wanting more and more drugs. Like, it was this awesome thing. Another one where the captain of the ship gets trapped under a soda pop machine vendor, and he like has a love affair with a scorpion because it's the only thing around, as he's trapped under this pop machine. And there's a robot, which is like the robot from Black Hole, keeps coming to like scoop up his teeth, because every time a pop comes out of the pop machine vendor thing, it like breaks his teeth. Anyways, it sounds really retarded, but you really need to see, especially the first season. I wasn't so into the second season of C-Lab, but the first season of C-Lab is fantastic. The other thing that they did in the second season of C-Lab that's totally hilarious, and when you're watching it, you're just kind of like, what the hell is going on here? It was like this episode where they decided not to do any dialogue for it, that they left the original dialogue. So like, that kind of straight absurdism cracks me right the hell up. And I was like watching it, I'm like, wow, this is This is the actual episode. I'm watching an actual C-Lab 2020 episode. And that's exactly what it was. I thought it was so funny. So anyways, we're going to go to some music because I've been talking for a while here. Before we played some Animaniacs for you, and now we're going to go to some more Animaniacs. This song is called All the Words in the English Language. That was one of the best things about the Animaniacs, but we'll get to that in a minute because, you know, Animaniacs deserve their own little special section. After that, you're going to hear Calamine doing the theme song to C-Lab 2021. You're listening to CJLO 1690 AM, and here is All the Words in the English Language.
And now, Yakko Warner sings All of the Words in the English Language.
Aardvark abating, a pet abdicating, a band and a base and a breast. A blaze and ablution, abhor and abusion, abbreviate, abbey obsessed. Abduct and ablation, abridge and abrasion, abash and abrupt and abride. Abscond and absentia, absent abstentia, abdomen ably abide. Abominable abrogate, absolute absent, absorbent abstention, abstraction. Absurd and abundant, abusive abutment, acacia academy action.
Well, there it is. Yakko Warner now well underway in singing all the words in the English language. I'm Dot Warner. With me is Dick Button. Dick, a good start?
Oh, yes, Dot. A marvelous start to what is a difficult, difficult routine.
Stay tuned, and we'll be back to bring you the whole thing.
Level and levity, lewd and longevity, libel, libation, lanai. Lithium, litigate, legal, legitimate, liberty, levy, and lie.
Welcome back. Yakko's now at the L's as he tries to sing all the words in the English language. A slight mistake at the F's. Here's what it looked like.
Facial and faction and fractal and fraction and fraudulent fragrant frappe. Frankincense, 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 shoot, yada yada flambe. Libation and libertine, limited limousine, limpid and limbo and lie.
Now that mistake could have proved costly for Yakko, but he recovered beautifully.
Now let's watch as Yakko continues with the L's.
There's lobby and loading and loathsome and loaning and logo and then locomotion. There's lotus and lottery, lobo, lobotomy, logic and loosen and lotion.
Yakko's now about halfway through all the words in the English language. Dick Button and I will be back with more.
Lozenge and lover and lucky and lover and lullaby lumber and Luke. Luster and luscious and lunatic lustrous and lurking and lunar and loot. Zachary, Zanzibar, Zappian, Zamadar, Zillion and Zip Code and Zen. Zany and zoning and zeal and zirconium, zodiac, zombie, Zayin. Zigging and zagging and zealous and zebra and zenith and zap and zephyr.
Yakko Warner now moments zephyr away from having sung all the words in the English language. Dick Button, is he going to make it?
If it was anyone else, I'd say no. But he's young, he's resilient, we'll just have to see.
And
guess not.
Zaire.
He did it! Yakko Warner has just sung all the words in the English language.
Hey, congratulations, Yakko.
Thanks, Dick.
Join us next time when Yakko Warner will sing all of the numbers above zero. Good night.
If you're not very busy, just tune in 12 to 2 for Go Funk Yourself with DJ FUNK and Classy Ass. They're my boys. You know, see, we go way back since high school. Pay attention, Tuesdays, 12 to 2.
And you're listening to CJLO 1690 AM. This is the Onomatopoeia Show, the show about Comics, where we cover all graphic arts all the time. And right now we heard Calamine doing the C-Lab 2021 theme. That was a great cartoon that came out in the from 2000 to 2005. It was created by Adam Reed and Matt Thompson. And when I say created, I mean that loosely, because all they did is provide the dialogue and did some various animations revamping the old stuff. The old stuff, which was originally character designed by Alex Toth. Woohoo! Next, I wanted to talk a bit about Nelvana, because Nelvana really formed me as a child. There was a lot of Nelvana cartoons in my life. How many of you guys remember the raccoons? Not necessarily a good one, but anyways, Nelvana started in 1971 with a British animator named Clive Smith and two Canadian animators named Michael Hirsch and Patrick Loubert. Clive Smith actually worked on Yellow Submarine, which I thought was kind of cool. One of the first things I saw by Nelvana was Rock and Rule, where it had like Debbie Harry and Iggy Pop and as these sort of like Romeo and Juliet characters, mice, and it was like full of music and awesome cartoons. I totally adored it. Nelvana also did Babar and Tintin, which I'd seen, of course, obviously. They did the Care Bears and Mad Balls, and then they also did Star Wars Christmas special. There was a cartoon in the middle of it with Boba Fett, which is just awesome, and they did that as well as droids and Ewoks cartoons. So there's like a lot of cartoons that they did that I watched as a child. So Nelvana, like, I totally worship. The other thing they did that bears mentioning is they branched out into live action shows for a bit, and they did the Edison Twins, which was very surprising to me. I was not aware that Nelvana did the Edison Twins. But there was also like The Devil and Daniel Mouse and Take Me Out to the Ball Game. These were all like really beautiful, clean cartoons, totally geared towards kids, but just excellently done and highly still recommendable. You know, when there's so much cartoons out there, there are some really good ones that are still out there. Other cartoons that I watched as a child that I totally adored were obviously the He-Man, She-Ra, Epic series. They were toys initially, and surprisingly enough, I did not realize this, but they were illustrated and character designed by Mark Texiera, who has done a lot of Marvel comics and some various stuff for DC. Even I think he's done stuff for Veronica, or maybe that's Playboy Comics. I'm not sure. Or Penthouse Comics. Yeah, I think he did stuff for Penthouse Comics. But Mark Texiera has been around, and I had no idea that he did the character designs for He-Man. So He-Man started in 83, and it went to 85, and then She-Ra came out in 81. The toys were in 81, and She-Ra came out in 85 as well. So She-Ra is kind of like He-Man's cousin, and the whole point behind He-Man is that he's like, it was sort of hilarious because, like, he's like, his alter ego is like this wimpy guy, and then, like, he becomes He-Man power. I've got the power of the universe and all this other stuff, right? So, like, it's pretty funny, but it's still good stuff. He had, like, this little guy, Orko, who was, like, his sidekick, sort of, you could say. And he, like, he had this character, there was this character, Teela, who was, like, his best friend, sort of. She was this cool girl, and she always got really upset with him because he was like always so weak and stupid, and she never realized that he was also super hunky He-Man at the same time. But it was for kids, and it wasn't as advanced as Gem and the Holograms, so there was no kissing. And actually, in my research, I discovered that Teela was the sorceress's daughter, but she was given up to be adopted by Man-at-Arms, and He-Man's mommy is an earthling, and that's why he's like, I don't know, He-Man. Anyways, because it's so silly. But He-Man, my brothers were so into it, and I, of course, was really into She-Ra, and I actually have some of the toys at home still because I love the packaging and the design and the style. And actually, the new He-Man series that came out in 2002, I enjoyed as well because what it did is it kind of had the old He-Man vibe to it, but then it was trying to market it to kids of this generation who are into the whole Japanese anime thing. So there's a lot of anime moments in the new He-Man, whereas the old He-Man, it had that awesome, charming rotoscope that I love so well. It was like, you know, they're running and then they tumble like 50 times because it's like the best stock footage of rotoscoping they have for He-Man. I don't know how they decided that, but another show that totally brainwashed me, and I know you know what I'm going to talk about because I've managed to sneak in about two of the songs so far in my 3 months doing this show, is Gem and the Holograms. I love this show so much. It came out in 1985 and it went on to 1988. It was written by Christy Marks, who used to write for G.I. Joe, so she made the writing of Gem and the Holograms like super intense. It was always like really nerve-wracking what was going to happen to Gem. Gem had an alternate band that was always competing with them called the Misfits, and they were super punk new wave and pretty cool, actually. And there, I just really enjoyed it because of the colors and the fashion. Like, I'm really big into fashion. So it was like, you know, new outfits every, you know, moment. There was music videos within the cartoon. And I was like, ever since I was a little girl, I was always into music. So I really loved that. And then on top of it, like, it was all girls and an all-girl band. Misfits were all girls. And then they were all multi-ethnic as well. You know, there was like a Hispanic girl drummer at one point. There was the black girl who was like the guitar or the bass player. And then there was the Asian girl who was the guitar player. So it was like, and plus they ran a halfway house for girls. So it was way more than just your average cartoon. Like, to me, I found and felt that Gem had a little bit more depth than, say, Rainbow Bright, which, and Strawberry Shortcake, two things that I also loved. But, you know, like, they were just geared towards kids and they were bright colored design and nice simple designs, so much so that I actually went out and got a Rainbow Bright toy about, you know, 5 years ago or so, just because I was like really into the colors, you know. It's weird how cartoons brainwash you as a child. You just, you get really involved in it. I also wanted to mention The Secret of Nim, which came out in 1982, and it was done by Don Bluth. It kind of looks a lot like what Nelvana does, but it isn't Nelvana, it's Don Bluth. And you know, it's one of those weird cartoons where I kind of try to recommend it to people, but at the same time, it's not really for children. There's some really spooky parts to it. But it's such a great story. It's about these rats who were performed on for science experiments, and now they're all smart, right? And they can talk and do stuff. But they kind of, the story is taken from a more homey angle, in the sense that it deals with Miss Brisby, who's got a sick child, and she has to go to where the rats are and ask them for help and medicine because her husband was one of the rats that helped them all escape. And so it's mostly about Mrs. Brisby and her family and the struggles and strife that she goes through to try and make sure her sick son is safe. But there's so much depth to the story, and it was based on a book, actually, which is also an excellent book if you're looking for a good book for a preteen, The Secret of Nim. Also, there was some awesome Sam and Max cartoons. If you've never seen this cartoon, I suggest you just go out and buy it right now, because it is geniusly fun and bizarre and weird. It came out in 1997. It was created by Steve Purcell. There's comics that go with it. It's about a rabbit and a dog, and they're like private detectives. But the dog is kind of goofy, but he's actually the straight man, whereas the rabbit is like insanely crazy with this giant mouth. And I love Sam and Max almost as much as Animaniacs. But yeah, Sam and Max. You guys need to go check out Sam and Max. Anyways, I'm going to go to some more music. You're listening to CGLO 1690 AM, the Onomatopoeia Show, where we talk about all graphic arts all the time. And I'm going to go to the He-Man Masters of the Universe theme, and then I'm going to play a Gem and the Hologram song that I totally adore. And then we're going to go back to talking about some of the other cool cartoons out there, like Dexter's Lab. Anyways, CGLO 1690 AM, here is He-Man, Masters of the Universe.
He-Man and the Masters of the Universe. I am Adam, Prince of Eternia, defender of the secrets of Castle Grayskull. This is Cringer, my fearless friend. Fabulous secret powers were revealed to me the day I held aloft my magic sword and said,
"By the power of Grayskull, I am the power!" Cringer became the mighty Battle Cat, and I became He-Man, the most powerful man in the universe. Only three others share this secret. Our friends, the Sorceress, Man-at-Arms, and Orko. Together we defend Castle Grayskull from the evil forces of Skeletor.
You think you're hot, then your star is due. You think you got something different and new. Well, babe, I got my eye on you. And babe,
Okay, I promise that'll be like the last Gem in the Hologram song you guys have to listen to in a while. You're listening to CJLO 1690 AM. This is the Onomatopoeia Show, where we talk about all the graphic arts all the time. And today we're discussing cartoons, because I love them. Like, really, I really love them. You don't understand. I'm a grown woman of 33 years of age who goes out and buys cartoons. It's like, I love them. Anyways, we're going to do some news, and then we'll go back to some of the best cartoons around, well, at least in my mind. I wanted to tell you guys about some cartoons. Sorry. There's in the Mirror, they mentioned there's going to be some Cine Kid programming starting at Eccentris this week. It's a repertoire theater downtown. On Sunday, February 2nd, the guy that did Paprika and Millennium Actress and Perfect Blue has animated La Traversée du Temps. And it looks pretty good. Maybe it'll be good. Maybe it won't be good. I don't know. But I'm fully supportive of theaters that play cartoons from other worlds. And, you know, I find Eccentris, or other worlds, other places, I find Eccentris is actually really supportive of cartoons. They were doing a whole bunch of cartooning programming not too long ago, and they have festivals and everything. And yeah, Eccentris, you rule. Also, the Cinéma du Parc is going to be presenting a bunch of the shorts for the Oscars, and some of them are the actual animated shorts that are up for Oscars. So if you're curious, you can go to the nominated short films of 2009 at the Cinéma du Parc that opens this Friday. So it's still playing, and it'll be good. And oh, Presto is playing too, which is the intro to WALL-E, which we'll be talking about later. So yeah, you know, everybody loves Oscars, and I love cartoons, so go check that out. The other thing I wanted to tell you about is there's going to be an exhibit called En Masse, where it's going to feature 28 artists coming together for a month-long collaborative effort. The Vernissage is the 28th of February, and it's going to be going on... Wow, those times make no sense. It says it's going to be going on from like 6 until 10 in the morning until the 1st of March. I don't understand. But anyways, if you just go to... Oh, they don't even have a website here. All right, well, Galerie Panger, and it's on Rue St. Paul West, and their phone number is 845-3368, 845-3368. The exhibit's called En Masse, and I'm going to be going because Rupert Bottenberg is going to be there, and I don't even know any of those other artists, but it looks really good because it's all black and, well, no, the postcard's black and white. The art probably might not necessarily be black and white. But the thing is you should go out and support your local cartoonists and artists, because they do cool things. And so that's the Galerie Panger on 40 St. Paul West. And their phone number is 845-3368 if you want to learn more about it. But the Vernissage is on the 28th of February. So, and I guess the exhibit goes on from the 1st of March to the 1st of, well, 1st of February to 1st of March. So you got a month to check it all out. So don't worry about it. And En Masse, go check it out. ENMASSE. You have to. Okay. Anyways, what else did I want to tell you about? That's all the news. Oh, I should tell you about my website. If you guys go to www.cartoongal.com, you can actually listen to the shows that are archived from the past. And soon, very soon, probably within the next week or so, I hopefully will be caught up on all the other shows, and then they will be podcasted on time, and you can subscribe to them and all that good stuff. So that's www.cartoongal.com. And in the next 3 weeks, trust me, there won't be like lame thrown together shows like this anymore. The only reason it's been like this for a little while is because I've been sort of hoping to play that Bernie Moreau interview for you guys. But the technology is just too evil for me. I can't sort it out. I need to get an exorcist or something in here for this interview. Anyways, the good news is that next week we'll be doing Batman Hype with Josh Mockel and Brian Joseph, who are two DJs here. They do... fantastic sci-fi, and they do The Kids Are So-So, and we'll be talking about the whole hype around the death of Batman and how a lot of superhero comics these days, especially DC, are totally capitalizing on the hype, and it's making me upset because that's what brought about the crash of 1990 comics. Anyways, there should be a name for that, the crash of 1990s, the Great Depression of comics of the 90s. And so we're going to talk about that. Then the week after, we'll have a Pat McKeown interview. And then the week after that, we'll have a interview with Rick Trumbull. So there's going to be lots of stuff coming up in the next 3 weeks. It's not going to be boring old me just talking about cartoons. So One of the other group of cartoon people that I wanted to tell you about is Dr. Katz. This is an old cartoon. It came out in 1995 and ended in 1999. You can get it on DVD now, so it's not so hard to find. But initially, when I really wanted it on DVD, I had to buy it off of eBay legally. And I'm not proud, but I didn't think they'd ever put it all onto a DVD box set, and I couldn't wait anymore. I needed it. And so I got it. But the thing that's great about Dr. Katz is it's, okay, first of all, he kind of pioneered this thing, Tom Snyder, he's the producer, called Squiggle Vision, and it's where it's like drawn really badly, but it's, you still get the idea. And it's kind of, a lot of people have a lot of trouble with it because it's so wobbly and stuff, but I really loved it because the thing about Dr. Katz is that it's really charming and it's like sort of unpolishedness. So whenever he'd be like talking to his son, because there'd be like, because the whole premise of Dr. Katz is like stand-up comics would kind of do their little shtick on his couch because Dr. Katz is like a therapist. And but the in between the shticks, there would be like segments between Dr. Katz and his grown son who still lived at home. And it would just, it was so funny, you know. It wasn't really like anything you would ever see in cartoons where they're kind of stuttering over each other and slipping up and laughing when they make mistakes, or even just laughing when they're sounding stupid, you know. And it was actually, the other thing too that's really interesting is that the guy that played his son, his name's H. John Benjamin, he was dating Laura Silverman, Sarah Silverman's sister, who also did a voice in Dr. Katz and was a character. She was like Dr. Katz's receptionist. And so when they started doing the cartoon together, they had just broken up, so like it really added to her animosity whenever she had to talk to Ben, the character, and because Ben was always trying to mack on Laura, the character. And so it made for some interesting tension in the cartoon if you ever watch it. But I totally recommend Dr. Katz because he's got people in there like Jon Stewart and Emo Phillips and Ray Romano, and all before they got famous, like David Cross, Dennis Leary, even at one point Winona Ryder was on there, like Dave Chappelle, like pretty much, you know, Chris Rock, any stand-up comic that you really loved from that time period is definitely on there. And it's so, so funny. It's Dr. Katz. Go. Also, Home Movies, which is, I want to call it a spinoff of Dr. Katz, but it's not really. It's got some of the same voice actors, but it's actually put together by this guy, Brendan Small. It employs the same Squiggle Vision technology. It came out in 1999 to 2004, and it was really adorable. Like, it was so hard not to like, because it was like these little kids. Well, they walk around in their pajamas, so I'm thinking they're like supposed to be six, maybe eight, but they're so tiny. But the thing is they're like trying to make movies. Like, this guy Brendan is like this total wannabe Orson Welles, so it's really adorable and funny and cute. And there's a lot of really sort of adult jokes. Like, I don't mean like sexy adult jokes, I just mean like, you know, jokes that adults would get and stuff. So yeah, I highly recommend Dr. Katz and Home Movies. Now, earlier in the show we were playing some Animaniacs and Pinky and the Brain and all that stuff, and it's really worth mentioning. I know Animaniacs is put together by Steven Spielberg. It came out in 93 to 95. It was kind of like my go-to cartoon after the end of Ren and Stimpy, which we'll be discussing soon enough, don't worry. Because Ren and Stimpy was like, okay, I shouldn't really be discussing it. We're out of order here. But Ren and Stimpy was so special that I needed something to fill the void. And Animaniacs did an okay job. Like, it wasn't the greatest, but sometimes it really blew my mind. And there would be all these little asides that you wouldn't even really catch unless you were paying attention. You know, like, they love Dana Delaney because she's so hot. So, like, she's in the opening credits sometimes with, like, totally insane Dana Delaney. And, like, they do things like, I don't know. Well, you've heard all the words in the English language. That was a perfect example. Or they do the one where they do the all the states in the country of the U.S. and they make it rhyme. He makes it rhyme and stuff. And the other thing about Animaniacs that was great, it was a different, it was a whole bunch of different cartoons. So there was this one with Slappy the Squirrel, and the one that I was watching on the Metro was so funny because it's actually happened to me. Okay, so you're taking a little kid to a movie and you don't think the movie's going to be that bad. It's a Disney movie, right? Like, how bad can it be? And in this cartoon, she took her kid to Bambi. And it wasn't Bambi, it was like Bumby or whatever, but you know, it was Bambi. And of course, when Bambi's mother dies, the kid just like collapses into tears, and it's like she can't get through to him at all. So she turns out she knows the woman that played Bambi's mother. So they go to like Nevada. Bambi's mother's all hunched over in a nightgown with curlers, and they're like, "Look, the kids just saw Bambi. He thinks you're dead. Can you just do the Bambi's mom bit for a minute?" And so all of a sudden, boom, she turns into the beautiful deer, and she's like, "You must not go in the forest, Bambi." And you know, and the kids are like, "Bambi's mom." He's all happy because the baby's mom's alive, right? So then they get on the plane to go back home, and of course it's Old Yeller. And so the mothers are like, "You know where this is going, right?" There's also another character called Mindy, who is like this little girl, and she always runs away, and there's like the dog, and I forget the dog's name, but the dog always has to chase after her, make sure she's safe. And she, her little shtick is like, you know, she'll be stopping a bank robbery in progress, and she's like, what you doing? Robbing a bank. Why? Because I need the money. Why? Because I don't have a job. Why? Because my wife left me. Why? And, you know, meanwhile, the robber's in tears, and then she's just going, why? And then all she's like, okay, I love you, bye-bye. And she runs away. And then, of course, the best one was Pinky and the Brain, which was totally genius. It was all about these two laboratory mice who were trying to take over the world. And one was a total brain, and the other one had a weird Liverpudlian accent and was kind of retarded. So, like, one of the best episodes ever. And one of the best lines ever that wasn't in this episode, because one episode, Brain realizes how brainwashing country music is. So he decides to become a country music singer, and he's like Jimmy Bo Ba Ba Brain. And at one point, he's like on the Tonight Show with Jay Leno and Dolly Parton, and she says something, and she laughs, and she's all like, and what do you think of that, Brain? And Brain turns around, he's like, I would say puberty was inordinately good to you. It's really funny. So then the other episode that I wanted to tell you about that was totally genius was when Brain realizes that cartoons can totally brainwash people's mind, right? And how, like, if he creates these two cartoon characters that are beloved by the world over, and then they suddenly go away, when they come back, they can rule the world as these beloved cartoon characters. It ends up backfiring on their faces. And so what ends up happening is when they become these beloved characters, which is like Noodle Noggin and Big Ears and Noodle Noggin, then they leave, right, to make people want them and demand them. What ends up happening is the whole world gets traumatized by their leaving, and like people that would become eventually Bill Clinton become these like fat slobs that don't want to do anything because they're so hung up on the loss of their favorite cartoon characters. Oh god, Pinky and the Brain, so genius. What are we gonna do tonight, Brain? Brain, what are we gonna do tonight? The same thing we do every night, Pinky. Try to take over the world. It should be mentioned, though, that Steven Spielberg produced those cartoons. It's so weird. Anyways, speaking of Ren and Stimpy, John Crocofalusi is an awesome, awesome animator. And he was the creative force behind Ren and Stimpy. It came out in 1988. I'm talking too fast. And in 1992, he got fired, mostly because he was slow, but also because, I don't know why, because he did this episode called Man's Best Friend, where Ren beats the living crap out of George Licker, and that was apparently just too much for Nickelodeon. So he got booted off. It continued to go, but I didn't watch it then. He also has done other great things, Mr. George Crocofalusi. He's done George Licker cartoons. He did a Bjork video for I Miss You, and he did a Tenacious D video that's so awesome. I can't tell you what it's called because it's too graphically sexual. He also did an awesome cartoon called Ripping Friends, which is like his take on superheroes. And it's so insane. I can't explain it, but it's totally worth watching if you find it on TV late at night. Let's see, some other things. The first time I saw Crocofalusi's work was at a Spike and Mike Twisted Animation Festival. And I should mention this because Spike and Mike actually really, really, really got me into a lot of awesome cartoons. Like the first time I ever saw South Park was at Spike and Mike when they did the Jesus versus Santa, or Santa versus Jesus. And then also I saw Don Hertzfeld for the first time at Spike and Mike. He did this awesome cartoon called Rejected. He just kind of stick figures. He's got his own animation series now called The Animation Show with Mike Judge, where, well, I don't want to say series, but it's like a festival as well. So Spike and Mike, I remember they used to do a festival of animation and a Sick and Twisted. And one of the Sick and Twisteds was like No Neck Joe, which went on to be this guy, Craig McCracken, who started working and created Powerpuff Girls. And then my favorite thing he does is Foster's Home for Imaginary Friends, which is like this bizarre little orphanage for imaginary friends. And it's so weird and bizarre. And like the main character is this boy who has to give up his imaginary friend, but he goes back to the orphanage to visit him every so often and hang out with the other imaginary friends. The other spinoff of all that is Craig McCracken got his chops on Dexter's Lab with Genndy Tartakovsky, who I also totally adore, who's take cartooning to this whole other different level. Like, it's just totally gone beyond what you can imagine with Samurai Jack. Like, he's created like Akira Kurosawa cartoons. They're just so poetic and beautiful. And also he worked on the Clone Wars for George Lucas, which is in it. But the thing that I discovered this super duper exciting is he's doing a Dark Crystal cartoon. Wow. Genndy Tartakovsky is the man. So without further ado, we're going to go to some music. For some reason, the station has the Dexter's Laboratory CD, which I think is so awesome because that cartoon is like the best. There are so many silly, amazing, funny things about Dexter's Laboratory. Like, I can't I can't even be critical about it. I know I'm not being very critical about any of these shows. I'm sure there are things to say about them to be critical about. But I just love Dexter's Lab because it's like science. And he has this funny accent. I guess it's kind of Gendy's accent, which is pseudo-Russian. Well, Gendy is Russian, but the accent's sort of Russian, sort of not. He's got this big sister who's like a little ballerina who's always getting into his stuff. And he's getting really upset about it. But he makes all these awesome science experiments. And it's so good. They did a movie called Ego Trip that I totally recommend. And I love Dexter's Lab so much that I bought all the comics and then I had them like put together in one giant hardcover book because any show that accolades science and nerddom, you know, like there were episodes about Tron and Star Wars and stuff. It's so good. Dexter's Laboratory. Anyways, this is Coolio doing a Dexter's Lab song from the Dexter's Lab soundtrack CD. You're listening to CGLO 1690 AM. This is the Onomatopoeia Show where we talk about all graphic arts all the time.
I got the little homie in the house. Y'all know his name.
Dexter.
Yeah. Y'all know his game.
Dexter.
That's right. You know, I'm talking about
Dexter's Laboratory.
Who was the most powerful brain creature you ever seen? This highly imaginative young boy genius. What's his name?
Dexter.
Say his name.
Dexter.
There's no young boy cartoon genius faster.
Photons, neutrons, electrons, molecules, and atoms, microorganisms, bacterial experiments. It's going down in the laboratory. No matter what the category, this young boy genius got 8 million stories.
What's his name?
Dexter.
Say his name.
Dexter.
There's no young boy cartoon genius faster.
Throughout the entire galaxy and the whole human race, there's not a boy genius with a more familiar face.
What's his name?
Dexter.
Say his name.
Dexter.
There's no young boy cartoon genius better. What's his name?
Dexter.
Say his name.
Dexter.
There's no young boy cartoon genius better.
Man, dark, take a hike, DD, go fly a kite. While Dexter takes his bike, makes a rocket and speed into the night. To alleviate your confusion, I don't know what TV you're using, but you better tune in and see what Dexter is doing. I'll meet you in the laboratory. If not, drink your juice, look out the window and watch the morning glories grow. That's how the story shapes up. You mere humans better wake up before aliens overtake us. Eat and shake us, barbecue and bake us, lunch, dinner, and breakfast. But who's got technology to save the world? His name is Dexter. That's right, I said Dexter.
There's no young boy cartoon genius better.
What's
his name? Say his name. There's no young boy cartoon genius better. What's his name? Say his name. There's no young boy cartoon genius better.
The most intelligent minds in the world want to know who's standing 2.5 feet high with stylish glasses and a lab coat. What's his name? Y'all know his name. Y'all know his game is science. We need y'all complete compliance. Don't touch that dial. Don't change that channel. Don't push that button. Don't you do nothing. Don't you be frontin'. No Dexter and DD every day on the Cartoon Network.
What's his name?
Say
his name. There's no young boy cartoon genius better. What's his name?
Dexter.
Say his name.
Dexter.
There's no young boy cartoon genius
better. We ain't here at 40.2 with the high IQ. He can do anything he think and he might try to. Left brain, right brain, center brain, all brain. Scientifically superior boy, master of all games. Rocket science, car, TV, and appliance. Magnetics, genetics, prosthetics, and synthetics. Robotics, antibiotics, analyze psychotics, anti-narcotics. Dexter's got it, so lock it.
What's his name? Say his name. There's no young boy cartoon genius better. What's his name? Say his name. There's no young boy cartoon genius better. What's his name? Say his name. There's no young boy cartoon genius better. What's his name? Say his name. There's no young boy cartoon genius better.
Can you guys wait here a sec?
How you doing? Nice to meet you.
This is Doc Holliday telling you to tune in to the Fantastic Cypher every Friday from 10 to noon for the best in hip-hop and everything related on CJLO.
Welcome to the Cypher.
1690 AM.
La, 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 la. This
This is my stop. Got to get off. I may go pop. Excuse me. Excuse me. I've got to be direct. If I'm wrong, please correct. You're standing on my neck. You're standing on my neck. You're standing on my neck.
And you're listening to CJLO 1690 AM. This is the Onomatopoeia Show, where we cover all graphic arts all the time. And today we're talking about cartoons. We're talking about John Kricofalusi. We're talking about Don Hersfeld, Spike and Mike. There's Dr. Katz. There's Billions, Dexter's Lab, Powerpuff Girls, all those great, great cartoons. And I'm running out of time like usual, so I'm just going to quickly go through the last few that I wanted to talk about. Plus, I wanted to mention, if you guys want to go to some awesome cartoon festivals, you know, Fantasia does a really good job of showing cartoons every so often. And yeah, just check out Excentris and the Cinémathèque Québécois. They also seem to have a really good respective cartoon theme every so often when it comes to their films. Anyways, I wanted to quickly mention, let's see, Arrow and Flux, created by Peter Chung. It was a Korean artist. It came out in 1991, and it was originally for Liquid Television, MTV. What it was sort of like little brief animated segments in between cartoons and videos, or sorry, in between videos and news and stuff. And the greatest thing about Anne Flux is, like, it initially started out where she was a super hot sort of bondage super spy, but she always ended up dying in the end. And so the absurdity really made me gravitate towards it. And from what I understand is Chung was totally influenced by Egon Schiele, which I think is so cool. Like, it's like a cartoon based on Egon Schiele's style, which is no big surprise when you look at the cartoon. Anyways, AM Flux, awesome. Daria is a theme song we just played for you. Prior to that was Ween doing the Oblongs. But Daria, I really like Daria a lot. Initially, she was like a guest on Beavis and Butthead. She would like show up and show how stupid they are because she was so smart. But then she ended up getting a spinoff on her own, and the style of animation was a lot cleaner and slicker and more solid looking. And it became like this sort of misanthropic teenage girl in high school surrounded by cheerleaders and jocks and idiots. And it was, you know, her lines were always great, good zingers. It's a great show. I totally recommend it. That came out in 93 and ended in 97. So Daria. And the Oblongs. Oh my God, the Oblongs. Based on Angus Oblong's book about Creepy Susie. It's like this family of mutated people. So like the father has no arms and legs. The mother is normal. The son has like two heads, and like it just goes on and on. And it's totally bizarre. Will Ferrell does a voice of the father, and it's just, it's really, really funny series. The Oblongs. Recently I got for $5. I love this city for that, really cheap cartoons. I was 16. It's like this show that's on Teletoon? YTV? I'm not sure. YTV, I think. But it's like, I can't explain it, but it's basically just about teenagers in the mall. But the style of animation is really slick, and I love the coloring. And it's, I watched like three episodes, and I actually found it pretty funny. Because, like, you know, there's like the girl who's like the go-getter, and there's the girl who's like the dumb girl who has like lots of money who now has to get a job because daddy cut the cards off of her. And there's like the guy who's like a total schmoozer, and then there's like this other guy who Yeah, anyways, it's hard to explain, but it's actually really funny. And I do recommend it. I mean, see, the thing is with the internet age, you guys can download all this stuff without worrying about ever having to pay for all the South Park stuff and all the, you know, SpongeBob SquarePants and the Daria and the Oblongs. But I suggest, because this is what I do, if I find something that I like online, then usually what I'll do is go out and buy it, because it's, you know, you got to give money where money's due. But 16 is quite funny. The other thing that's cool is in Canada, we animated two Louis Trondheim cartoons. And I think that's so, so awesome. Like, I'm really into Louis Trondheim. He does a lot of wicked comics. Dungeon is one. He's a French artist who's part of an alternative group called L'Association to do cartoons. And he did La Mouche, which is the fly tails. And we animated them in Quebec. And he actually is not very happy with them, because I actually had a chance to ask him about it. But I love them. I find them very charming. La Mouche is just a story of a fly and the adventures that he has. They're silent, like the fly doesn't talk or anything. But the other one that I found for like $3 at Rossi was Kaputz and Zotsky. And they are like my favorite Nimrod characters. And Nimrod was a miniseries of Louis Trondheim stuff published in English by MBM. And Nimrod, oh my God, Nimrod. Well, Nimrod's awesome, but that's a whole other story. I mean, Kaputz and Zotsky is so funny. They're like the ultimate obliviators. They like try to take over our worlds, but they fail miserably at it. And it's really, really funny. They're just the silliest conquering aliens you ever did see. Also, speaking of conquering aliens, Invader Zim, highly recommend that as well. This is created by Jonan Vasquez. He did the comic Johnny the Homicidal Maniac. So, you know, I can't believe anybody ever gave him any money to do a cartoon, because his sense of humor is so messed up, bizarre, awesome. But I'm happy. I got to see Invader Zim, and it's like the most fricked up cartoon you ever did see. And it's for kids. Like, it's messed up. But basically, the story is he's an alien who's there to invade Earth, but he disguises himself as a third grader. So he essentially has like absolutely no power at all. And he totally fails left, right, and center in trying to take over the world. And somebody is actually onto him. There's a kid who knows that he's an alien. So the kid spends all his time trying to prove that this guy's an alien. And but there's just like so many surreal, bizarre moments. Like one of my favorite episodes is the episode where Dib is the kid that knows that he's an alien, is telling him, you know, you're going to have a physical and they're going to know you're an alien when they find out that you have like alien body parts. So then Zim is all like, okay, well then I'm just going to get human body parts and cover it up, right? So he goes like crazy with it. He like gets so many human body parts. At the end of the episode, he's like Jabba the Hutt, and he's like, you know, intestines and kidneys are spilling out of his mouth, and he's all like, haha, Dib, they're never going to find out that I'm an alien now. This is so stupid, but so awesome. And of course, it bears mentioning that Invader Zim's sidekick is this little doggy thing called Gurr, this little robot who disguises himself as a fluorescent green dog who loves Slurpees and says really silly things like watching static on TV and going, I love this show, this is my favorite show. And also, Big Guy and Rusty the Boy Robot came out in 1999, ended in 2001, unfortunately, but it was originally written by Frank Miller and illustrated by Jeff Darrow. And I have to say, for a cartoon, it was very faithful to the style. And it was interesting. You know, Big Guy is a giant robot and Rusty is a little robot, and they have adventures together. Last but not least, I want to talk about Drawn Together, because we've got like 3 minutes and we're out of time. Drawn Together is the quintessential show for the cartoon lover. It is a reality TV show with cartoon archetypes, and it has every cartoon character you ever possibly imagine in it. And so if you are a big fan of cartoons, then I totally recommend going to see or renting Drawn Together. It's like there's like the Zelda character who's totally closetly gay. There's the Superman character who's totally closet gay but will have sex with anything. There's the Disney princess character who's completely racist but also has like a whole bunch of animals that hangs out with her with big, you know, big Disney eyes. There's a sort of SpongeBob SquarePants character, but he's like a totally weirdo character unto himself. There's like Adam Carolla does the voice of like this pig who's an internet cartoon character. And so like it's just this really cool amalgam. Like at one point you find out that pseudo Strawberry Shortcake character has like slaughtered everybody in the wannabe SpongeBob SquarePants character's world, and so that, you know, she becomes like this sort of weird Nazi. In another episode, one of my favorite episodes, the Zelda character comes out of the closet and then he ends up on the street having to prostitute himself. But what ends up happening is he ends up crying all the time. So then these Japanese cartoons will like pay tons of money to see this like Zelda character cry. And one time, at one point, it was Totoro. Oh God, it was so funny. Anyways, again, out of time. So I'm just gonna go straight to the music. We're going to go to Happy Tree Friends, and we're going to play Richard Cheese doing the South Park theme. South Park is one of my favorite cartoons ever. I will not talk about Family Guy ever, because South Park is so much better in a zillion different ways that I find the show to be completely genius on a regular basis. maybe I'm biased, but whatever. And then, so Happy Tree Friends, which is just a violent animals killing each other, and SpongeBob SquarePants, which is so weird. It's like a kid's cartoon if you've ever watched it, but then suddenly, you know, Jim Jarmusch is in it, and it's the strangest thing. Anyways, this is Richard Cheese doing the South Park theme. Stay tuned for Lonesome Stranger. You're listening to CJLO.
I'm going down to South Park, gonna have myself a time. Friendly faces everywhere, humble folks without temptation. Going down to South Park, gonna leave my woes behind. Ample parking day or night, people shouting, howdy neighbor. Bobby, go ahead and kill Kenny for me, will you? Heading on up to South Park, gonna see if I can't unwind. I like come on down to South Park and meet some friends of mine.
Do 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 do